All right, we're continuing the book of James, and my job this morning is to talk about the path of temptation. And I don't know if you remember what Josh was saying last week, but the book of James was was very early in the history of the New Testament, written to very new believers. Written around about AD 50, which means it's around 15 to 17 years after the Lord had risen back to glory. So it's very, very early in the church history. And you know, it's quite normal and natural to think that such a new movement, such a new thing to work out, that the believers naturally would have had problems, would have had a bit of difficulty. Don't you think, Pat? Yeah, absolutely. So James, he pens this letter to believers back in AD 50 to help them with their little issues that they have as Christians, living as Christians. Now, it's no coincidence that it's in the New Testament. And it's no coincidence that God has preserved this little book, because the problems that they were having back in 1850, same problems I'm having today and you're having today being a Christian. You know, a lot of commentators give the book of James all sorts of titles. Practical Christianity is one. Being a Christian is another. It's a very, very practical, hard-hitting book. If you're an average reader, now, I'm a below-average reader. It'll take you 16 minutes to read all of the epistle. That's all, 16 minutes. How about I give you a challenge? How about you read the Epistle of James every Sunday morning? I'm only going to take you 16 minutes. If you're an average reader, that's what it takes. If you read fast, maybe 12. It takes me about 20. Do that. Get familiar with this book. It'll help you no end. All right. Now, I don't have muffins, but I've got memes. Temptation. There isn't a person in this room, no matter how old you are or how young you are, that doesn't know what temptation is. I love that. If you want something done, just put a sign up like that. Yeah? When I was a kid, you know, back in the olden days, they used to paint white fences out the front of people's houses, and on the way to school, there on a Monday morning, there'd be a little sign in chalk, wet paint. I had to make sure, didn't I? Because they could have been lying. It just, you know, you had to touch it. What about this one? Okay, you got it. It's a little bit hard to see, but did you see, it's the horse there in the, you know, some temptations. Yeah, it's just so hard to resist. All right. And then there's this one. A trial, which you talked about last week. That's the wrong one. Anyway, that's okay. Now, who likes a test? Who used to like tests at school? Put your hand up if you liked a test. Look at all those hands going up. Look at them all. Yes. Oh, yeah. I used to hate Friday mornings. Spelling test morning. Do you remember this book? Who remembers this book? I mean, it's just people. Yes. This is the spelling book from grade 3 to form 2, which is year 8. You have to pick 20 words out of here, 15 sometimes. On Monday morning, your teacher gave you the words and you had to write them out, put the definitions down. This book is a horrible book. I used to hate this book. It used to stress me out. Thursday nights in bed, I couldn't sleep. The spelling test, child abuse. I reckon child abuse. I reckon this book was a sadistic thing that teachers used to get back at the students. I really do. Spelling book, hated it. But you know, tests showed the teacher where we were at, you know, in the regards to spelling and comprehension. And whether or not we had learnt the words, their meanings, how to spell them. And so tests were very, very critical for the teacher to do. Was there any better way of doing it? Well, here's a way that I would have preferred. Raph, did you learn last week's words? Yes, miss. Raph, do you know how to spell them? Yes, miss. Raph, do you know what the words mean? Yes, miss. It would have proven nothing. Nothing at all. The teacher wouldn't be sure whether I actually learnt them or not. Whether I had really understood what the word meant. A trial. Is it different from a test? That's an interesting question, isn't it? That's what James is tackling now. Is a trial different from a test? Because the word trial, the definition, means a testing, putting to the proof and an examination. That's why those court things that we have, those court scenes, what are they called? Trials. They try the evidence, don't they? They try the testimony to see if it's true, whether it's right or whether it's wrong. It proves. That Greek word, that's not a misspelling. It's a periasmos. I think that's how you would say it. Desi's not here, so it doesn't matter if I've said it wrong. But it means to prove. And that's the word that's being used here, to prove. And in the context of where the word's used, it's either used to prove whether something is right or wrong, positive or negative. I'd like to read you a passage. I'd like you to turn with me, if you can, to Deuteronomy. It's down the front in the Old Testament. Here's a really interesting passage. Deuteronomy chapter 13. The Word of God is very clear on whole heaps of stuff, isn't it? You know, I mean, we had a lovely illustration here, but it's really clear on what God is like, His character, His love for us. The fact that he provided salvation. A whole heap of information about God in the Old Testament. So chapter 13 of Deuteronomy, from verse 1, it says, if a prophet or one who foretells by dreams appears among you and announces to you a miraculous sign or a wonder, and if the sign or wonder of which he has spoken takes place, and he says, hey, let us follow other gods you have not known, and let us worship them, you must not listen to the words of that prophet or dreamer. The Lord your God, what does it say next? Is testing. God is testing. He needs to know. God, it says, your Lord, your God, is testing you to find out whether you love him with all of your heart and all of your soul. God tests us to find out whether we've grown as believers, whether we've learnt the lesson that you heard last week that Josh gave. The Lord tests us, doesn't he? It says here, God tests us. Stood the test. In this little passage, we see that God needed to prove by evidence that the people loved him. He had to examine their hearts and show that the hearts belonged to him. God has always tested his people, always will test his people. God will test you maybe tomorrow morning. He will. Stood the test is a phrase that's often used, and the definition is said to mean something or someone has proved its value or worth and has not failed. And that's what God does. He tests us so that we can stand that test, stand that trial, act and respond in accordance to his will, in accordance to his word. And sometimes we fail. That's okay. And we know where we're at, don't we? Need a bit more work on that, don't you, Raph? It's okay. But we need to do that. And God tests and challenges all, I believe, in their faith to prove its worth, to refine it sometimes, to show us, not show everybody else, but to show me the area I need to work on. Deuteronomy 13:1 says that the Lord your God is testing you to find out. That's another reason for a test or a trial. To find out. To prove. To find out whether you love him with all your heart and all your soul. That's in the Bible. It's in the Bible. Now, I always struggle with my spelling tests. Always. You know, I'm a migrant. Let me just point this out. As an Italian, right, I'm a migrant, born in Italy. As an Italian, I'm an authority on pizza. And there is not a recipe for Hawaiian pizzas in Italy. In fact, there's a law. There's a law. I just thought I'd show you that. But anyway, because of my immigrant background, there was nobody at home to help me with my spelling words. I had to do it all on my own. And I struggled with spelling. I always did. I didn't always do well on the Friday morning test. Occasionally I failed, actually. But I wanted to do well. I really did. I really wanted to do well. So sometimes I cheated. Confession time. Sometimes I cheated. I did. I cheated. I cheated on the spelling test. Now, the spelling test was meant to help educate me, which is a good thing. The spelling test was a good thing. The spelling test was meant to see where I was at in my education. Another good thing. I wanted to do well on the spelling test. That's a good thing, isn't it? Isn't it? It's a good thing to want to do well on a test, on an exam. Of course it is. I wanted to pass. You know, my goal was never 20 out of 20. I was happy with 15 out of 20. If I could get 15, I'm walking on cloud nine. And that's English teacher, that English teacher, she caused me to cheat. She did. It was her fault. No, it's not true, is it? No, of course it's not. But that, you can think like that, can't you? You can think that like that. You can justify cheating, doing the wrong thing. See, the English teacher never wanted us to cheat on the test. Defeated the purpose of why you have the English test. And sure, she would have loved to have had everyone in that class get 20 out of 20. It would have made her look good, yeah? But it would have been false if we had cheated. It wouldn't have achieved its desired purpose. So we get to verse 13. Tempt. Tempt is a different word from test and trial. It really is. So why does James bother with it? Because we can get them muddled up. We can get them confused, can't we? Tempt means to entice or allure to do something often regarded as unwise, wrong or immoral. But also, it could also have a, you know, not so bad meaning. It could mean to attract, appeal strongly, or to invite. Like, quite often I come here on a Tuesday morning and tempt the pastor with coffee and donuts. And he succumbs every time. He does. So, you know, sometimes we need to know, don't we, what temptation is. Because the people in James, they thought that God was tempting them with trials and testing. Oh, that's wrong, isn't it? That's wrong. That's why James is writing this. And sometimes we think like that too. We could think that God is tempting us. He doesn't tempt. God, like the English teacher, never tempts. The English teacher never tempted us to cheat. She showed us. She gave us the words. She wrote them on the board with chalk, you know, back in those days. And she told us what they were and explained the meanings to us and told us to go home, write them out 5 times. Helped us to learn them, you know, and then she tested us to see how. She never said, if you don't know them, by the way, Ref, you could write them on the ruler, the back of the ruler. The hard ones, the longer ones, you can write them on the. She never said that. And God never tempts. But, brothers and sisters, temptation is everywhere, everywhere. And it's there all the time. Not just on Friday mornings, during the spelling test, not just whenever I wave a bag of donuts, Josh, is it? It's there every day, all the time, in all sorts of forms and guises, absolutely. And there's two things that I've noticed about temptation. One, it has no limits. And two, it plays no favourites. No one is exempt or immune. You know, there was an old fella, an old brother, at one of a church that I used to attend to back in when I first got saved. And I used to go up to say, oh, it must be great being an older believer. You don't have to worry about temptation. Oh, he was saying, oh, no, Raph. He says, it's just as hard, if not even harder. Because I thought, once I became more experienced as a believer and more mature, I would be able to resist the temptation, no problem. It would have no effect on me. Foolish, wasn't I? Wasn't I? Plays no favour. Temptation has many, many faces. Stealing, lying, gossiping, cheating, envying, striving for popularity, vying for power, ego, lust. And James wants us to understand 4 things about temptation in these couple of little verses. First one, in verse 13, temptation is always present. No one is exempt. James says, when you're tempted, not if you're tempted, when? It's a given, brothers and sisters. We're going to be tempted. You'll be tempted this afternoon. You might even be tempted now. Right now. No one is immune. Not even a believer sitting in the worship service is immune from temptation in that moment. Have you got that? Or the youngest kid up at Greensboro Plaza walking through Kmart with all those toys and things. You know? You're tempted, no matter where you are, who you are. 2, God never prompts temptation. Let's be super clear on that. It says here, it says that when you are tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. Now, temptation is an opportunity to accomplish a good thing, like passing your spelling test, right? A good thing in a bad way. And that, I didn't say that. Chuck Swindoll says that. Out of the will of God. A temptation is an opportunity to accomplish a good thing in a bad way out of the will of God. It was wrong. It wasn't wrong for me to want to do well on my spelling test. It was wrong to cheat to achieve that good end. And so, God, he does not tempt anyone. I don't know if you've got your Bible open there at James, but in verse 13, there's two, one, two, three, four times the word tempt or tempting is there. On three of those occasions, it's the Greek word number 3985. It means nothing to you, but that's the word that was up there. So that's the same word. But the fourth one, which is the one that says, for God cannot be tempted by evil, that word there is number 551. Now, I'm telling you this because it's a different word. In the Greek language, they picked this word. James picked this word, was inspired to pick this word. And it's only used in the New Testament here. Now, you know, you may think, so what? Well, when I was being taught about the Bible and Scripture, you know, something like that's very significant. You know what the word 551 means? Only used once, only used here, in this context, it means where it is incapable. It means incapable of being tempted to do evil. So James is making it really clear that God is incapable. It's actually something God can't do. God can't be tempted by evil. So James is making it really clear. So if you're tempted to do something wrong, it's not from God. Very clear. I hope we've got that clear. But I want to show you this. Now, my home group will tell you, I mention this verse quite often. It's one of my favourite, it's actually my go-to verse most days. Here's what it is. God doesn't tempt you. He doesn't. So no temptation, it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 8. If you've got it open, I would suggest you underline this verse or circle it. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man. So, you know, sometimes I think to myself, oh, this is a tough thing, you know. Why am I here? Why has God put this on me? Why is he testing me? Why is he tempting me? See, I'm getting all confused. I'm getting all the words mixed up. And I say, why are you... But God is saying, hang on a second. You know, it's just the normal run-of-the-mill temptation. Everyone's the same. We're all getting tempted the same. And it says, and it goes on and says, and... So not only is it just the common things that tempt everybody, and God is faithful. Good. I'm glad about that. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you are able to bear. Oh, I love that. Because when I'm there struggling with this temptation, I'm thinking God is saying, hey, Raph, it's okay. You can bear this one. I wouldn't let you be tempted more than you're able to resist. That's what it's saying. It's just like those great commercials, you know, that tells you not only do you get the steak nice, but wait, there's more. There is. And then it goes on and says, but when you are tempted, he, that's God, will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. Now, you know, I don't know about you, but that gives me so much confidence. You know, the way out, the way to resist temptation isn't always obvious. I want you to know, brothers and sisters, this morning, this verse tells you the way out is there. Look for it. It's there. Why? Because God promised it. He says, you're being tempted? Yes. It's tough? Absolutely. But there's a way out, Raph. And you're strong enough to bear it. And open your eyes and see the way out. That's what that verse says. That's why it's critical for me. Because I get tempted a lot. What about you? There's no need to buckle under the temptation. None whatsoever. Verse 14. And brothers and sisters, let me tell you, that's grace. If anyone wants to ask you, show me an example of grace. Here it is. God's not tempted. He can't be tempted. He knows I can. He knows my weaknesses and my strengths. And he says, I won't let Raph get tempted more than he's able to resist. And I'll show him how to get out of that. There's a problem there, isn't there? And James is going to tackle that in a minute. Verse 14. The third thing that James wants you to have a look at is that temptation is a process, and that's or a path. That's the title I was given, a process. By verse 14, by his or her own evil desires. That's what it says. Have a look. By each one is tempted by his own evil desires. He is or she is dragged away and enticed. You see, it starts. Temptation starts with evil desires. Whose evil desires? Not someone else's. My evil desires. Now, the NIV puts it like that. A lot of the other translations, even the more modern ones, it says your lusts. That's what evil desires are lusts. So there's nothing wrong with a desire. Desire in itself is not wrong. You can have a desire to come to church. A desire to read your Bible. Good thing. But lust is a strong hunger. You ever been hungry? Josh has been hungry, yeah. I'm picking on you because, you know, I know you can handle it. It's a strong hunger for anything, power, money, pleasure. But the key thing about lust is it's uncontrolled. Uncontrolled desire is never good. Absolutely never good. Galatians, I haven't got time to read this, but in Galatians 5, 19 to 21, it talks about the lust of the flesh, and it gives you all these things that is, and Paul, you know, he talks about, he gives all these lists, I think it's about 12 or 13, and he says, and there's more. It's not a comprehensive list. But there's the lust of the flesh, which is James is talking about here in particular. Then there's the lust of the eyes, which is material possessions, you know, taken up with all the stuff, you know, cars and houses and clothes and the latest gadgets. Then there's the pride of life, which is the ego, the arrogance, the pride. These are the things that are evil, and they entice us to do the wrong thing. Check out the process here that James gives us. First of all, we're dragged away, which is a term that refers to like hunting, and it refers to a trap. Lured into a trap. That's what it means to be dragged away. And the word entice is a fishing term, and it means to bait. Like baiting a hook. Always felt sorry for fish, you know, thinking that, you know, it was a worm or a fly or whatever. I was never good at fishing. I had a mate who was a fly fisherman. He's very good. And he used to have all these little things and to trick the fish. So, and you know, in a trap, If you were looking to what, I don't know, hunt, what would you hunt? Like a fox, say, for example, here in Australia. You wouldn't put a lettuce leaf in that trap. You wouldn't do it. He would not be interested in a lettuce leaf. But a sausage pat, a bit of meat. They would sniff it. Now, I couldn't find a trap that had been set up and covered, but usually they're not like that. They're covered with leaves and twigs. And all you see is the little sausage, maybe, a little piece of meat. And have you ever watched them trying to you know, approach a trap? They sort of know that it's, you don't normally find a sausage lying in the forest, but, you know, it smells so good. And they get a bit closer, and they lean into it, you know, and bang, and there it goes, right? So they sort of know that it's not, so they're tempted. aren't they? They're tempted. The sausage isn't doing the tempting. It's their own desire that propels them to where? It takes them to a path into the trap. Same with the fish. So it's always something that appeals to us. You've got to have the right bait. My mate used to tell me, you've got to have the right fly, Raph. That's why you're not catching anything. There was a lot of other reasons I wasn't catching anything, but that was one of them, the wrong fly. You know what else those things do, apart from trap you? They keep the consequences hidden, don't they? I mean, the fox doesn't see the jagged edges of the trap that's going to, you know, grab his leg and, you know, keep him there until whoever comes along knocks it on. They don't see that. The fish isn't interested in the little hook with the barb on the end of it that's going to get into the side of his mouth and it's going to really be painful. No, they're not interested in that. They don't see the consequences, but they're there. Always there. That's the reason. They're hidden. And this is Satan's domain, to deceive. He's a deceiver. He never tells you the cost of that desire, that evil desire that you have. He never tells you that. Think of Lot. You know, Lot was looking, and he was looking at the well-watered plains. You know. And he went to the edge of the city, and then went into the city. He even sat in the city gate. You know, but have a look at the end. That's what James is talking about here. David was the same. King David was the same with Bathsheba. Enticed, dragged away into the trap, and look at the consequences. And that's the fourth thing that James is looking at in verse 15, the consequences of temptation. Oh, I thought this was good. This is a hipster trap. I thought that was good. I thought I'd show that with you. This is what you would put in a trap. Of course, it would be more hidden than that. You know, sunnies, or, you know, different things that attracts us to that. That's what it is. If you saw that, you wouldn't go near it, would you? You would say, oh, no, it's dangerous. But that's not how it normally looks. Verses 15 and 16. James says, each of us is tempted by his own evil desire. He's dragged away and enticed. Then, after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. Then, if you take the bait, if you're fooled by the law, by the lure, it says the evil desire is conceived. So that's the path, isn't it? First, it's the temptation. A little thing that, you know, is attractive or desirable. Nothing wrong with it in itself. It's not wrong to be tempted, brothers and sisters. We will be tempted. How do we respond? How do we respond? The process is in motion. The result always is sin. It's always a bad outcome. Always. You know, sometimes I got away with the test, cheating. I used to hate the Wednesday or Thursday morning surprise tests. I hadn't prepared to cheat. They always caught me out. That's when the teacher knew that I hadn't really learnt the words. Full grown, the consequences of our sinful acts, our disobedience, sometimes are instant. You know, sometimes that trap snaps and straight away you're trapped. You know it. Oh, what an idiot. Shouldn't have done it. Other times, it looks like you may have got away with it. And it's not until sometime later, years later, the consequences of that are borne out. That's really true in affairs and sort of things like that, isn't it? Sometimes you think, oh, I've got away with it. No one knows. But it always comes out in the end. And it's always detrimental. And unfortunately, it's not just detrimental to me. I do something wrong and I pay tough of the... That's fine. You cop it, don't you? Sometimes it affects others. It affects our family. People that we love. Think of David's family. David sinned with Bathsheba. No, he got into trouble, lost his kingdom. So what? Fair enough that he lost his kingdom. Have a look at his family, though. The devastation of his family. You know, David was never the same man after that. And what about Adam and Eve? The whole of mankind suffer the consequences. Still today. Pretty serious, isn't it? And verse 16, I've got to hurry up and finish. It says there, verse 16. So here's the advice. Here's the advice from James, the Lord's brother, writing to Christians who are struggling with temptation and trials and testings. He says, don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. Sometimes we're easily deceived. I did my thing, you know, I looked up the word deceived. And I looked at the synonym for deceived. There's a whole of them. I think it was about over 20. I've learnt a lot since my cheating days in spelling. I've come to appreciate English language and so forth. But you know, I found 5 really interesting synonyms in that big list. The first one I thought was interesting was baited. That's another word for deceived. Baited. Another one is lured. Oh, that's in there with the list for deceived. Lured. And then there was snared. Oh, that's like being trapped, isn't it? Oh, wait a minute. Trapped was there as well. So in the synonyms for deceived, there's all those words, baited, lured, snared, trapped. But here's the one that really tickled my fancy. I really love this one, hoodwinked. That's an old word, isn't it? Huh? That's just putting something, just not completely, just a little bit there so you don't see clearly. James is saying, don't be deceived. Don't be baited. Don't fall for the bait. Don't be lured. By the fancy little feathers, if you're a fish. But we're not fish, are we? We've got to be careful that we're not lured by, you know, things. That's what Satan does. He lures us away from God. Don't be snared. Don't be trapped. Don't be hoodwinked. Be on guard. Guard your mind. The Bible talks about that as well. Guarding your mind. Not only is your heart desperately wicked, but a lot of our actions start with thoughts, yeah? And then they manifest themselves in actions. And the stark contrast is, hopefully that's the right slide. No, that is the right slide. Can I get that last slide back on? Sorry, I lost track here. But the stark contrast to temptation is verses 17 and 18. Every good gift. If it's not good, brothers and sisters, it's not from God. If it's going to cause you to cheat, lie, steal, be dishonest, be proud of yourself, you know, be arrogant, it doesn't come from God. It doesn't. We sang a chorus, I think it was the second last one, that talked about when Satan tempts us. Satan does tempt us. He puts the lure out there. He puts the bait in the trap. What about our evil desire? What's our desire? Is our desire the things of God? Is our desire to do the right thing? Is our desire to be obedient? Because that's what God's looking for. And this is what James is trying to tell the believers here. You know, we have a responsibility to be aware of these things. You know, the English teacher, she didn't want me to cheat. God doesn't want you to cheat. God doesn't even want you to fall into temptation. He knows you'll be tempted tomorrow. He knows. And he's already provided a way for you to get out of that temptation. Look for it in the morning. Look for it. It's always there. And be aware that God knows you can handle it. Whatever the temptation is, He knows. And it'll be different. Different for you, different for me. He knows you'll be able to bear it. He's promised that in His word. May the Lord bless the reading of His word and the explanation, and I hope it's a blessing to you.